Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
What's going on, all you Brooklyn Buddhists? This is Woody Massey, producer of the Jimmy Dale Valley Brooklyn Buddha Podcast, co-hosted by Tim Homune and myself. Today on the podcast, we had Kelvin O'Brien. Kelvin, an amazing young actor here in Los Angeles, trying to bust his way into the movie game. He's got a lot of credits. We'll be posting up his IMDb page in the bio, so go check it out. One of my favorite movies he's actually in, Midnight Meat Train, which is a really messed up, gory horror movie about the subways late at night. So go check it out if that's your thing. Jimmy's back in town. From the Carnival Cruises. He's doing a military show in Texas right now. And later on this, at the end of the month, he's going to be at the Laugh Factory in Long Beach. Check it out, folks. He is going to have, he's going to be rolling the crowds out. It's going to be a good time. Have a great day, and always forget about it.
Brooklyn Buddha. So, as I always say, excited, you cannot be on the Brooklyn Buddha podcast unless I have met you. We've worked together. This guy is a great, great actor. We did this film called Monday Night Shakespeare, where he played, I don't really know Shakespeare.
Mercutio.
And that was his character. Tim, you know, did you do Shakespeare, Tim?
Me? Nothing.
Nothing.
I
Woody?
Attempted.
Mm-hmm. I need that. Woody's not even fucking paying attention.
Yeah, I'm checking something.
Yeah, all right.
Did I what?
He's
did
Googling you do Shakespeare?
Did it look like I did Shakespeare?
Yes.
Yeah. There's Fiddler on the Roof or Bus.
All right. So anyways, without further ado, I'm going to bring this guy on because he's ready to talk. He's been here for a while. He's been... just been racially profiled as he walked in the door. And we're going to go with actor. Just actor and all-around good guy, Kelvin O'Brien.
Well, appreciate that. Excellent.
So you're from the South?
Yep, South Carolina.
South Carolina, born and raised.
Born and bred.
And when did you get out here?
10 years. 10 years ago. So, 05.
And is this where you came first? You didn't go to New York?
No. I was in Jersey. I did some shows at the Shakespeare Theater in Jersey, and then I hopped on a plane.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just decided, it's too fucking cold.
It's just like, so I was in Jersey doing some shows, got some buzz in the New York Times from a performance I had, and the lead of the show was on that show, The Ghost Whisperer, with Jennifer Love Hewitt, David Conrad. And we were walking to the theater, and he said, "Look, man, I really think that you could do well in film and television. You should probably think about moving to L.A." And I'd already been thinking about it, and him saying that just kind of gave me the kick in the butt to do it. So packed two bags, hopped on a plane, and I was out.
So did you come out here? You did a showcase of some sort?
Nah. I did my first film when I was 14 in Charleston, a movie called O, with Martin Sheen, Mekhi Phifer, Josh Hartnett, right before he blew up. I think Julia Stiles was in it. Yeah, she was. And so I had that, and then I did a Jodie Foster film before Emile Hirsch blew up. It was his first film, actually, so I had a pretty good part on that. And so I had some credits before I came out here, and then I got here not knowing anybody, didn't know where to go, so I really took a year and just tried to figure it out. Bumped in my commercial agent, and it's been kind of rolling ever since.
So are you going out a lot commercially?
Yeah, I go commercially probably 3-4 times a week. I'll probably book about 4 or 5 a year, pay some bills, but I'm still trying to kick that door down as far as film and television stuff.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like I was working like crazy, and then this non-union shit really kind of just it upset me, man. I mean, I usually have about 3-4 commercials a year running, and then I had that, you know, the last thing I had was the big Honda campaign. And before that, I had the Verizon Wireless campaign. So that was great. And then it's just like it dried up, you know what I mean? And I had this one agent. I had switched agents. And she's actually a big agent. And I called my manager. I said, they keep sending me on non-union shit. And I get there. I'm like, yo, what the fuck is this? And I leave. It's non-union again. I leave. And it's like, so... I said, yo, if they send me another non-union thing, I'm out. And he calls her and goes, look, if Jimmy don't want to do non-union, then I can't rep him. There's stuff is like 60-70% non-union now. So yeah. When I first moved here, I was in Santa Monica. I mean, 7 to 10 times a week. My wife's like, why don't we just move there? You know what I mean?
No, man, it's crazy how before I came out here, everybody was saying, you book a couple national spots, you're good to go. You could buy a house. I mean, I talked to this one guy. He said, this was in the 80s, early 90s, but he said, you know, he did one Wendy's spot, and he made over $200,000 from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had that number in the back of my mind. So when I get my commercial agent, I book my first spot. And so I'm thinking, like, oh, I'm good. And I get the check. I mean, it's nice. I mean, it's like, you know, $10,000, something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's not... You know,
not the 200.
It's not that, just not buying a house money. So, yeah. So that was a Rent-A-Center spot. The next spot I booked was a Honda spot, and it was a pretty good campaign. So I'm thinking again, it's like, okay, now this is the one that's going to pay, and it paid less than the other one. So it's amazing how the commercial contracts have kind of fallen off.
Well, are you doing voiceovers at all?
That's a tough one to break into, man. Like I did with the Honda spot I was just talking about. They had a voiceover radio campaign that they just booked me for because they liked me on set. So I said, you know, come into the studio and we'll do this thing or whatever. But ever since then, I can't break into it. It's such a small community that's really hard to break into. Once you do, though, it's just some pretty good money in it, though.
Well, yeah, I can help you with it. I can get you into you'll have to take class.
Yeah.
And that'll break you in. And then it's almost like they have these workouts where... Let's say, you know what I mean, you know, you eat dinner with your wife, you kiss her goodbye, and then you go and you do 3 hours at some, like, booth at some agency or casting or just engineers, and then they're like, you do it, they give you a flash drive, and $20.
Boom.
You pay $20.
Yeah.
That's actually how I did my reel. I took a class, and then I took another class, and everybody was like, in the intermediate class, they were like, oh, man, I gotta get a reel, and they're like, it's $2,000 to $3,000, and blah blah blah. And I'm like, I ain't fucking paying no two. And I had already did voiceovers in New York. I just didn't. I had this like shit reel, and they were like, and my buddy, I met this one guy in one of the workouts, and he's like, dude, you don't need no fucking reel. He's like, let me listen to your stuff, and he listened, and he goes, let me put that together for you. So I gave him like $200, and. He put it in my reels like a $2,000 reel.
Nice.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I guess what I'm trying to explain is it's about like talent. If you have the talent, people usually want to work with you. They want to, you know, it's like a casting director's like, you know, I used to believe that you audition and when I first, because in New York it was like you audition and you just book. You book the guest star, your co-star, you book it. Here, they kind of make you. Oh, we want to see you. I want to see you at what the fuck show? Like at Bones. You're like, you're going for Bones, and cast director's like, man, I really like you, man. You were great, blah blah blah. And then you don't book it.
Yeah.
And then the next week he brings me back in for another guest star. And then the next week he brings you, and then like 3 months down the road you book it.
Yeah.
Because they want to prove that consistency, and they're gonna hire you, and they want to be like, I discovered Kelvin.
Yeah, and it's such a volatile business too that everybody. Everybody thinks that, you know, being an actor is such a difficult job, but there's really no job security in any line of work. So a casting director, their job's on the line every time they make a decision. Mm-hmm. So what I've learned is they will bring you back in 3-4 different times before they bring you to producers.
Sure.
Just to make sure that you can deliver. And it sucks from our side because you go and you kill an audition, you think, okay, I got to just shot a book in this. But in reality, you probably are auditioning for 3 jobs down the road.
Right.
You know, but it's a hard thing to wrap your brain around, especially when you know, you got bills to pay.
And they don't even teach it, like in acting class, they don't even tell you that. You know, that's the problem with acting class. One of the things that I hate about L.A. is I used to joke about it. You know, if I'm doing a show in Hollywood or something, I go, there's more acting schools than there are actors.
Yeah.
You're like, and I'll meet like these hot actresses or something that are maybe trying to be comics, and they're like, oh, I study at blah blah blah, Leonardo went there. I'm like, Leonardo DiCaprio, you think he went to the fucking actors boot camp? Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that's how they sell it. No, that's how they sell it. It's probably he walked in, looked around, and was like, can I use your bathroom? Yeah. And then walked out.
That, like, drives me crazy. So, but one thing I have found is that these people are very, you're usually pretty loyal to your teacher. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, he's God. You know, he's amazing. Oh, what he made me do. This is...
Yeah, it's crazy, too. I think it's sort of the evolution of an artist. Actually, a person. So, you know, I moved out here when I was 21, and I was much more green than I am now. You find your legs as an actor and as a person. So I can go into a class now and sift through the BS and get to some... If I see something that I think is going to be beneficial to me, I can grab that and take it and not feel like I need to please whoever's name is on the front of the building. Whereas younger kids, they'll go in and think, oh, I have to do exactly what this person says or else I'm not going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the traps. That's how they get you to pay so much money continually, because they make you believe that you need their method to get to, you know, why I coached Brad Pitt for XYZ 20 years ago. Look where he is now. You could be that if you just do this thing and keep paying me this money.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, It's a weird thing, like the acting world. What were you going to do if you weren't an actor?
So initially I got my degree in theater, but I went in as an education major. Like, I wanted to teach elementary school. So I went in, this is after I'd done the Jodie Foster and the Martin Sheen movie, and I didn't really think that I wanted to pursue it as a career, because it was something that came super easy to me. Like, I booked the first... like probably 10, 15 jobs I ever went on. Something that was like, okay, that's in my back pocket. But when I got to school, I got a couple different film opportunities, and a lot of the feedback I was getting, I felt like I was fighting against something that I didn't need to fight against. So at that moment, I think it was 2004, I said, a friend of mine had just died, and my aunt, who was like my second mom, she had just died, and I was in this really weird place where I felt like my world was upside down. So I just said, you know what, I need to make a change. I switched my major to theater, and then the artistic director for the Shakespeare Theater came down, saw me in an audition setting, booked me in her play that she was directing. No lines, so she's basically a stage, you know, human prop. And she liked me so much, she invited me up to her theater, and I ended up booking two shows up there, and then the rest is kind of history. Mm. So to answer your question, it happened in 2004. A very definitive moment.
Is your wife in the business?
Not at all. Not at all. And that's a gift and a curse, too, in that I can go home and kind of wash my hands of the business. But at the same time, she doesn't really... when I try to explain certain things that go on in the business, where, like, I'll go into an audition for, a big film or a big television show, and I don't get the part, but I go in and I do good work, and the cast director's like, oh, yes, this is great. And I'm trying to tell her... kind of what we just talked about. This is for the next step. Mm-hmm. She's like, but we're so there's no paycheck coming then.
Yeah, exactly. I learned it was just about like let me just do good work in that room. Let me do good work in that room. I mean, I've been in so many. like a fan of mine is now Jason Alexander's a fan of mine, so I auditioned for him for a commercial he was directing.
That's crazy.
So I go in, and he's not there. I don't know, right? I get the call back, and he's there. And he's like, oh, my God. As soon as I walked in the room, Jimmy, oh, my God. Let me tell you, your audition was so good. Blah, 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 blah. So now I sit, and he goes, look. And he goes, wait a second. And he runs out, and he comes back, and he goes, look, we're just looking for whoever's working opposite you. You're the guy. So I sit with him for 3 hours, and we audition people, and everybody's coming in. People know me, so they're like, what the fuck, you know what I mean? Like, I'm the star with Jason Alexander. We're buddies. We're eating lunch, you know, this whole thing. So it's great. So we go into, I get a call. I leave an hour, and I get a call an hour. Oh, my God, I don't know what you did in that thing, but Jason Alexander, you're his first pick. Casting's going crazy, blah, 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 blah. So I go, all right, well, I'm going to Alaska for shows, and then I get a call 2 days later, and my friend Josh, who's like a major stunt guy, and he hits me up, and he goes, hey, I'm with Jason Alexander right now, and the only reason I'm calling you is because he is pissed. He couldn't be madder and he's not mad at you. He says he wanted you. He was talking about, he's like, I'm so mad that this fucking guy wanted to cast and da da da, and they went over my head and they cast somebody else. What the fuck? So he's like, I'm not fucking. So that was it. He wasn't going to direct any more commercials for this place. So now that's the phone call I get. He goes, my buddy goes, hey, I'm doing the stunts on the thing. You're not doing a commercial. They cast somebody else. And I said, oh, what the fuck? So, you know, I just got off stage in Alaska, and I get that phone call. It's like 11:30, so it's 8:30 or whatever the hell it was here. And I said, okay, whatever. And then I don't see Jason for 6 months or a year. And I get invited to the celebrity poker tournament, and I'm there. And everybody, it's insane to see him because people are just around him. He's peeing. They're there next. Can I get a selfie? And I'm with my friend Bobby Costanzo, who's a famous actor. I'm with Bobby. Yeah. And Bobby's like, hey, this is Jimmy, blah, blah, blah. And he introduces me, and he goes, because I, you're an actor, right? You're like a great actor. And I go, oh, thanks, man. He goes, I wanted to catch you. And he just goes into this whole thing. And then we've been, like, buddies since. It's not like I fucking hang out with him. But every time I see him at poker, we hang the time. Like, we'll hang the whole time we play. Like, we eat and, you know, whatever it is. And it was great. So the thing is, as my wife says, you know, don't count your chickens. My mom always, you don't count your chickens before they hatch, you know. So it's like, sure thing. I'm booked. I'm running around town thinking I'm in this commercial. I'm not even telling anybody, but I'm just thinking, and I don't get it. Because it doesn't matter what you do in that room. There's so many fucking things that can fuck you, man.
90% of the stuff that goes into you booking a part has nothing to do with anything in your control. Yeah. And that's one of the things that you have to kind of embrace if you're going to live this life, in that, you know, all you can do is prepare the way you can,
right?
And then just kind of let it go, because honestly, that's how we met. So I did a workshop with Jared, who wrote the Monday Night Shakespeare that we worked on together, and he, you know, he liked whatever I did for the casting director, and he called me one day and said, you want to work on this thing? It's gonna be funny. And then I met the cast, and I was like, yeah, this is gonna be great. I was really excited. We get on set, and people are just nice. Like, you and Rocco and everybody was just super cool, and that's why we kept in touch. And, you know, I came to see you do your stand up. It's because, one, you're good, and two, you're just a good dude. So I think that overall, you know, being a good dude and hard, being able to deliver, eventually things are going to start to fall into place, and just not get caught up in all the BS and try to fit yourself into whatever you think people want you to be. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that for me, the happiness comes from knowing I put in the work. You know, it's like an athlete. You go in the gym and you put up 100 shots. Eventually, you know, you'll get your call up and you're going to be ready to go. For me, it's waiting to get that call up to the bigs and take advantage of the opportunity.
Yeah, it's sort of like you were saying that as you get more and more, you can detect bullshit, like acting teachers and also with actors, you know, the guys that got a name drop at the auditions, got to schmooze whatever, rather than just focus and do your thing. Yeah. You start to realize, all right, these guys are putting up a front to try and fit in.
Yeah, to fit into whatever peg they think that they want. They think that the casting directors want to see. And a lot of times they don't even know what they want, to be real with you. Like, a lot of times you go in and you bring something different to the table, like, oh wow, that's new. You may not get the part because of it, but it's definitely going to make them say, okay, this guy's a pro. You know, he approached the text in a way that he's going to bring something different to the table.
So, like, my buddy is on Shameless. So he's been on for, I don't know, 6th or 7th season, whatever it is. And he's been on maybe since the second season, and it's great. Everything's great. And who's the guy who cast John? Is it John something?
Shameless?
Yeah,
I forget his name.
He had cast ER, right?
Yeah, I know you're talking about.
So anyways, my buddy had always, you know, auditioned good, and then booked ER, and everything that guy had ever cast, he booked. So getting in there with that casting director for Shameless is kind of a hard thing. So he went in, and they're like, hey, it's just a one-off, you know, it's just a few lines, blah, blah, blah. So he did it, and now he's been on, like, five or six seasons, and that's another thing. They'll try to fuck you. So he was for a couple seasons, maybe two or three, and this is what they told him. That's why I didn't say his name, right? Right? So, no, because I don't want, because what I'm going to say. Yeah. So it was co-star, co-star. It was always co-star.
Yeah.
You know? And he was like a co-star, so they're like, that's what they were paying him. And then the last few seasons, I look and it says like guest star. So yeah. He gets his guest star pay for the same fucking thing he's always did.
Yeah.
So that's where your agent, because some of them are such pussies. Like my friend was on the Criminal Minds finale. And I go, dude, you're a fucking amazing man. He's like, can you believe they only gave me fucking co-star? I go,
no.
I go, you're the fucking killer. Just unsubbed the whole episode. He said, dude, they paid me under scale. I go, under scale? I go, you're SAG. He goes, they go, look, tell them to take it or leave it. We can get anybody to
see,
do it.
And that's the problem.
What the fuck?
So I think it was the best year of my career was probably 07, where I was booking good commercials. I was booking, co-star, guest stars on shows. And then 08 happened. The writer strike, the economy got crazy bad, and how everything kind of, it screeched to a halt for me career-wise. And I'm still actually kind of working my way back from it. But, so what it did, you look up and you've got A-list celebrities doing television, whereas, 10 years before that, they would fire their agents if they brought that to the table. And so that trickle-down effect has affected everybody coming up to where now they can say, you want this three-line part? And we're going to pay you under scale, you can take it. Or we can just get this guy that's everybody knows, whatever name you want to put in there. It's one of those things. So the game is really fucked up right now. And it's a little nerve-wracking. Because there's nothing you can do other than the same shit you've been doing. It's just harder to get through that door.
Yeah, see, like my fans, they don't get to listen to this. This is a good, we've had four different podcasts. They've all been great today. This is something that's really deep that for them to understand about booking. So, like, my friend is a multimillionaire commercial guy. You'd see him in every fucking thing. And all of a sudden, for 5 years, he didn't book a commercial. Now, he had that money. He put money in stocks and this and that. But regardless, having money is, if you're an actor, it's not all about just having money. You kind of want to be working. So, I mean, here's a guy who did a minimum 20 commercials a year. A minimum, and this is when the money was there. Boom, boom, boom. So he's like auditioning, and he goes on about a good 75 to 100 auditions that year. Doesn't book again. Boom. Doesn't book. Wants to give it up. And wait, what's that?
That's him. That's the guy right now.
Yeah. So he doesn't. Get to go on. He keeps going on these commercial auditions, keeps going, and he's not booking, and he's not even getting callbacks, and then he books this big one. It pays about $375,000 is what he ends up making, right, for this commercial, huge fucking commercial, and he says to the casting director, to the director, he says, man, he said, I'm so excited to be back, and the guy goes. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, yeah, you're great. You're great in this, man. And he goes, oh, man, thanks. He goes, yeah, I haven't been in a commercial in 5 years. He goes, I used to book everything. And the director didn't know who the fuck he was, had no idea who he was. And he goes, can you tell me how I booked it? And he goes, oh, you were the right height.
Height.
He's got a million lines. Yeah. Height.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
That's what it comes down to, man. That's again.
It was like a Ford truck commercial.
That's so.
And it was like, you gotta be kidding me. He goes, oh,
it's
my
4
god.
4 foot two. We're looking for somebody.
Yeah. No, that's it's crazy how it can come down to something. As
5 years,
as
no
that.
Bookings, yeah. And then right height. You're the right height. And he goes, are you kidding me? He goes, no, man. He goes, it was between you and this other guy. He goes, you were just a little taller. You just looked perfect in the frame. And that's
no, that's crazy. My cousin's he's getting ready to move out here. He just graduated from undergrad, and he wants to be an actor. And I'm trying to explain to him everything we're talking about. Like, it's not this business. It's not as glamorous as it seems. It's really difficult to navigate a whole career. I mean, you may have some years where you're cooking, but for the most part, if you want to have longevity, you're going to hit some lulls where you're not, like you said, you're not going to work for 2-3 years, maybe. And it's not because of anything that you're doing differently. It's just sometimes your look may be in, sometimes it may not. It's just you have to maintain that positive mindset and know that eventually it's going to come back, or else you're going to drive yourself nuts. I have so many friends who've moved out here who moved back because they couldn't handle it. It's a grind that people don't really, really understand. And the benchmark for success for a lot of people is how much money you make. And in reality, there's a handful of actors who are like really, really making that type of money. Like you were saying before, you could see a guy who's on a show and you're thinking, oh, that guy's good. And they could be paying him co-star money. And that's a couple hundred bucks, maybe a G. Like it's not what people think it is.
Yeah, it's like if you do. So I got offered a part on House of Cards, and it was $100 a day. I'm like, nah, I'm not gonna do it. You know, I'm gonna fucking fly to Atlanta or wherever the hell it was, right? Yeah, I go, and they wouldn't pay my, they wouldn't pay my flight. I'm gonna lose money. I know nothing about this show at that point. I think they, of course, make money now. You know what I mean? They probably make money now. But that was the first season, you know what I mean? And that was like, you think Kevin Spacey's making fucking $100 get the fuck out of here?
No. When I stayed in Baltimore, I used to see them shooting it all the time. Like they shot it right like down the street from where I live.
In Baltimore. Yeah, it's a good show. But you're right. I mean, it's that's power. Like being able to be comfortable enough in your skin to say, you know what, nah, man. Like I don't need the $100 to.
Yeah, I have like a different way of thinking. Like. And my wife would get mad at me for these, like, little things. I mean, I don't turn much things down. But it's like, I don't want to jump on a plane for $100 and die. Yeah. I literally think that way. Like, oh, what if I crash and also, die for $100? Also, but
business-wise, I mean, what sense is it? You're in the hole to take a part that may or may not make the final episode.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's a part that somebody's going to see and be like, okay, I need to book him for another thing. It's, you know, if I feel like I'm taking it's worth the gamble to where if I pay my airfare to get this part, and I think it's gonna potentially help me earn more work, I'll sacrifice that. But if it's just something where you're just trying to get over and not pay me, no, I don't need
it. And what's happening is, and I know from the comedy world, and I've noticed it's trickled down into acting as well, that a lot of the not only taking trained actors or celebrities, but people with Twitter following, a reality star who just, they know, okay, you know, he can plug the movie or the show, throw him a couple lines.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I've had multiple experiences where I lose parts solely based on social media numbers. It's constant, and it's also, you're right, they will cast somebody who is nowhere near as skilled, nowhere near as trained, over somebody who put in the work and can bring life to this character solely because it's a marketing thing, right? So if they hire a guy who has 2 million followers on Twitter, the guy tweets out one thing about the film, that's built-in marketing for the project. And I guess I get it from a business sense, but it hurts the overall product and it's diluting the quality of the work that's being put out there.
And wait. So I'm reading an email. This is what I received this morning. So my friend says, submit to this agent in Atlanta. They're amazing. He's like,
they're filming a ton of stuff.
Yeah, he gets a minimum 5 on-camera auditions that he does at his house, and he books. He books guest stars and everything, right? So I hit him up, and now this guy does not live in Atlanta. He lives here. Now, he doesn't have a bigger resume than me. He doesn't, you know what I mean? But it says, thank you for your interest in blah, blah, blah talent. I'm only interviewing actors who permanently reside in Atlanta or the surrounding area. With the increasing amount of work here, our CDs now expect to see actors in person for live auditions, callbacks, and bookings on very short notice. We need you to be able to jump on a plane. If you're able to jump on a plane and get here, like if I say you have a callback, you can just jump on a plane tomorrow. That, you know, I'm just saying how it's a... And then I would love to represent you because of your resume, your look, your reel. You seem to be a great actor on tape and this and that. Somebody I'd want to work with. But that's not con- conducive for actors who are not within driving distance to Atlanta or able to jump on a plane for the callbacks. If you want to resubmit, if you relocate, I would love to represent you. Now, this is a huge agent that sent me that. So that's, here's the thing. You know, when we see that, that's discouraging because you're like, I'm fucking perfect for all these shows. They're shooting and it's, you know. So what I'm saying is, once again, my friend who's on Shameless, the huge show, or my buddy who's on a major guy in Modern Family, it doesn't matter no more. Like, those, you would think, oh, my God, I'm on, you know, like back in the day, oh, I'm on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to book everything.
Yeah.
Now, back then, yes. Now, fucking matter.
No, because there's so many more platforms, right? So Netflix is taking over. Like, they've got so much scripted. So there's so many different platforms for content. And, because, again, it's everything we said before. There's so many people who they think could do the work that right. They don't necessarily have to pay. So if you build up your resume, they don't even want to pay quotes anymore. So a lot of talked to a couple friends of mine who make pretty good money, but they won't do jobs because the producers or whoever won't pay them what they're worth.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that they have 15, 20 other people right behind them that they don't have to pay as much. So it's it's discouraging.
Yeah, I think my co-star quote the other day was, whatever, I think they gave me like almost 300 less than I normally get. And I was maxed out at co-star quote. And that's what I always get. And now it's like 300 less.
Yeah.
And they had told my agent, and he said, I don't want to say the show. It's actually coming out next week, I think. Right? And but it's like, are you kidding me? Like, how this is a fucking hit series. You're in your third or fourth season. Yeah. How can you not give me? I'm not asking for $1 million. I mean, you know. And once again, my agent goes, look, they'll just get someone else. They'll just get someone else. Yeah. They're not like a buddy of mine who works all the time. He said to me, because I'm like, hey, I got the callback. And then he told me one day, he's like, stop with the fucking callback. Stop saying you got a callback. Like, he goes, look, they don't want to cast you. They've already got somebody.
Yeah. Well,
and that's another, like, this is a very good conversation for these young actors to understand.
Yeah.
Callback doesn't, it's great. You got the callback, doesn't mean really anything.
If it's a network show, or a movie with a budget, chances are if you're reading for one of the leads, there's three or four offers already out.
Yeah.
And then it's just a matter of who accepts it. So I read for the Entourage movie, like super last minute. It was one of those offices where they weren't seeing really anybody. My manager said, you know, I don't know, you're probably not going to be able to get in for this. And she called me on a Friday, so they want to see you on a Saturday morning. So, mm-hmm. I get the stuff and I prepare, whatever, go in, kill it. The cast director is basically like, are you available? You know, it's so great. You know, I'm glad you were able to come in and do this. And so I'm leaving thinking this is going to be a good look for me. Didn't get it. Kid Cudi ends up getting it, the rapper.
Yeah. Sure.
And, well, so in reality, they probably had an offer out to him months ago. And they were just covering their behinds and just seeing a bunch of actors. And now they had me in their holster to where, like, so I'm sure, and I'm also sure if Kid Cudi turned it down, it probably kind of like Bow Wow, like it would have trickled down.
Exactly.
Like it would have been to where I was down here. And they just, I mean, it, as much as we're talking about it, it is discouraging. You really just have to, it comes down to whether or not you believe in hard work, right? So if you believe in hard work, you have to believe that at some point it's going to pay off. And then at some point, it some kid will be talking about, you know, a movie he went out for that I end up getting because I had the offer before. So it's one of those things where you kind of have to bring it back to, okay, I'm putting in the work, I'm getting great, I know I'm doing the right thing. It's just I gotta wait my time. I compare a lot of things to sports, right? So I think that you put up the shots, you put up 1,000 mm-hmm. shots like Bird, you put up, you know, the shots like LeBron and Kobe and those guys, and you're then you're just ready for when your moment comes.
Mm-hmm.
But until that moment comes, you have to keep grinding.
You know what's interesting is that, and this is like 2014, they were talking about the demographic 13 to 18. They said, who's the biggest, you know, movie star, TV star? And five out of the top 10 were YouTube stars. Mm-hmm. We're not even, you know, somewhat acting, but, and that's that generation now that doesn't even see, think of movies, or they're just social media stars are the new movie stars to these kids.
Yep. And it's, yeah. And I also think that is, I'll say a problem, but it is a big reason why studios and producers are willing to hire people like that, because it's really less about the quality of the content, it seems like now. It's just more, they just want more, more content. Because these YouTube guys and these Vine guys, I mean, they're putting up stuff with Twitter and stuff, it's constant. Mm-hmm. And you don't have the time to really develop characters or anything like that with that stuff, but that's what's selling. And these kids, they're on their phone all the time. They're, okay, what's next? That's funny. Okay, what's next? Yeah. What else you got?
Attention span.
Yeah.
So, you saw Star Wars, right?
No.
Okay, so they got the black guy, right? So
he was a big actor in the UK.
That's what I'm saying. So, have you ever thought of trying to get that passport or anything so you can go over there and work in the UK or Canada? Have you ever worked in?
I haven't worked in Canada. I've read for a bunch of shows that shot in Canada, and I'm not opposed to it. But it's what we talked about before. It have to be the right opportunity. Like, I'm not gonna. Like, I set my home base up here, and I think it's the best place to be if this is the career path you want to go. But if somebody were to call and say, you know, I saw your stuff, and, you know, I think I've got a part in England that I think you'd be right for, if you can get yourself out here, I can get you in front of the director or something like that. I would try my best to save the money and to go to do that. Because I actually heard a story about Michelle Pfeiffer in Scarface, and that they basically had her fly herself out to New York, and the director basically was like, I just wanted to see if you wanted it enough to pay for your flight. We're definitely going to reimburse you, but now that we know how deep your commitment is to this, we want to offer you the part. So I have that in me. It's just I wouldn't do it just because. Like, I'm not going to.
And they might make a black version of Scarface, so you'll be.
I'm with that. They're talking about Donald Glover.
And there is a black rapper,
black Spider-Man, and they shut that down.
Oh, black Spider-Man.
Yeah, because they shut that down. People lost their minds with that.
You know, it's so this is a really great conversation. And here's the thing about this fucking guy.
So that's
this is my best friend. We've been writing together, comedians, for over 20 years together, working our asses off. He comes out here, he gets a divorce, he comes out here. I put him in a project right away. Boom. A film. He kicks ass in it. The director, I kind of argued with the director because he's like, oh, because I just want to use him as a voiceover. And I go, no, you got to show his fucking face and this and that. So he shows it to him, and Tim's great in it. So the next thing, me and him write a pilot, and then we star in it with me, him, and my buddy Jerry, and it's great. So now we're shooting another short film. So here's the thing. He took acting classes with me for 5 years straight,
That.
5 years in New York City. We weren't in the top school, but we were in a good, you know, good teacher. We had a good teacher. He worked. He directed Third Watch. You know, he was, you know what I mean? He would direct things, and he's really good. Did lots of theater. But here's the thing. Tim took acting in college and whatever the hell it was and did plays. I never did anything. So it's amazing to see him not work for, I feel, 100 years. He hadn't worked as an actor, really. And he comes right here, does that other part that he does a great job in. And then give him a lead role in the series, and he fucking knocks it out the park. And I'm like, how the fuck does that happen? How does that happen, Tim?
Well, my problem is I have a horrible memory. I get.
Oh no! We did another. We did the fucking court. Me and him wrote a pilot, a courtroom comedy, and then fucking this guy produced it. We shot it.
Funny story. So
and Jimmy, he had a million lines.
I have a million lines. Jimmy goes, I know you have a horrible, because as a comic, I've been doing some of the same jokes for 20 years, and I'll still blank on stage. Yeah. Every time I go, I blank because I just my brain. So he goes, you better remember your line. We're working on my lines, working on my line, working on. We do it, Jimmy blanks. But what happened was years ago, what really threw me years ago, I was auditioning for some casting director, and someone said, hey, I have a little play. And I did a play in New York City, and we did a couple of rehearsals, and I blanked on stage at the time, and I improvised, and because it was a funny thing, and I went through, and I knew the beginning, middle, and end, and I got through it, but I fucked up the other actors, and they were pissed at me. Yeah. And after that, I was like scared to fucking. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna blank. Every in my head, I was blank. So I started focusing more on stand up, but I wasn't acting. So when I came out here, that was the cool thing with Jimmy is, you know, got me back in that. Motion.
That's crazy. That's another aspect of the game that I don't think people realize. It's a mental game too, mm-hmm. right? Because I mean, the best actors work maybe. I mean, they don't work that. They get told no a lot, mm-hmm. and for sure. people working up, I mean, you get told no basically daily. Mm-hmm. So how do you continue to hear these no's and maintain the thought process? Okay, I can still do this. You know, you have to be conditioned enough to where you can say, all right, man, they're. That's their opinion. It's fine. But it does get difficult to consistently be told to go into a room, do what you think is good work, and to be told no for whatever reason. So you have to get a grasp on the mental game and find happiness in the actual process and not base your overall well-being on booking a job.
Yeah.
Like there's, you know, there's actors that come at me because they're like, oh man, you're writing this, you're directing this, you're producing this, and you're doing, hey, if you got a little part for me, blah blah blah, and it's like, in my mind, it's like, well, you know, I want the best actor for the part.
Yeah, that's gonna serve the story.
Right, and I could throw, if Tim didn't do good the first thing we did, he wouldn't be in his other things. But he's great. Tim's right. You know, he's ready. He's ready to be working all the time. So. I had like about, you know, I got this new film. I post on Facebook, and I had like 20 people hit. Man, I'd do anything, just a few lines. Da, da, da. And I want to go. You have nothing on your IMDb. You don't have a reel. You have absolutely nothing yet. You call yourself an actor.
Yeah.
You don't even have good headshots.
Well,
like you haven't did any of the hard work.
See, that's the
problem. Drives me crazy.
In that people who don't put in the hard work because of the YouTubes and the Vines mm-hmm. and stuff like that, they're much more visible now, right? So people really think that they can do this. And it's not that. You can't some of the best actors I know have probably made $10, like they probably haven't made any money from it, but they're in the classes. My first class when I got here was studying with a woman named Sharon Chatton, and this is where I really learned how like what it was to be an actor. And we're in that class Tuesday nights from 6 to sometimes 12 at night, just working on stuff, finding things and growing together. And a lot of the people in that class that I really respect, Nina, Angus, like these people that I watched them. They taught me what it is, like, this is why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's that. So if you call yourself an actor and we're having a conversation like this and you can't, and I ask you, okay, so what you've been doing, and you're like, oh, nothing really, then I can't take you serious. It has nothing to do with whether or not you have, you know, you made X amount of dollars from some show you got. Like, what are you doing on Tuesday night? What are you doing on Monday? Like, what work are you doing to do this, to call yourself an actor? That's the problem. Because anybody can say it. Anybody can move to LA and say, oh, I'm an actor.
Yeah, they take some headshots.
Yeah, get some pictures taken.
You know, yeah.
You know, so it's definitely tough. But the biggest thing that I do love about what we do as actors and really any performers, we inspire people, right? You know, so we're on the grind. I'm from a small town in South Carolina, and I have so many kids that I didn't even go to school with, just younger kids who they'll see me on a commercial or something like that, and I'll get a Facebook message like, oh man, that's so cool. Like I never thought I'm gonna try to do something like that. It's inspiring to them to see you working hard for something, and it helps people see that in themselves and mm-hmm. to let go of the fear of taking a chance to do something.
Right.
That's the overall thing. When it's all said and done, I would love to have just inspired as many people as possible, whether it be through just my relentless pursuit of this work, or from some project that I book and you know blows up.
So you're in the business 10 years, you feel? more?
Really, really, probably like 10 years. Like,
so,
actually going
after. So you're still studying?
So always. That's never going to stop. It's a constant, because that's our job to comment on the human experience. And right. it's constantly evolving, right? So you always have to be fine-tuning your instrument. You always have to be aware of what's going on in the world. It's a never-ending process.
Right, right, right. So, and you feel that, let's say 20 years from now, you're not a star, you're not, or maybe you had, you know, a series and then it lasts a couple seasons, you know, whatever it is. Is there a time where you don't say, you know, maybe it's not my thing, I don't want to, you're going to do this till you're Morgan Freeman,
well,
right?
Well, it's basically, I mean, this is who I am, you know, it's also, I'm not a quitter. Right, so I quit every. Again, I go back to sports.
Sports, yeah.
You know, I was the smallest kid, and growing up in every grade, and I was a basketball. I loved basketball. Wanted to play. Everybody told me I couldn't. Like they just said, you're too small. And in my mind, I already made it up. Like, I'm gonna play varsity basketball, at some point. And I did. I put in the work. I got cut a bunch. You know, I was in the gym as much as I could. I worked out as much, and I ended up, you know, making the varsity basketball squad. And so I go back to that. When it gets really tough, I'm never going to quit, because when I made my mind to come here, there was no timetable. And my measure of success isn't monetary. My measure of success is like, am I fully pursuing the thing that's going to make me happy? And that's what I'm doing. Because in the meantime, I can make money. I'm working three jobs right now. You know, I'm working three side jobs right now to put money on to put food on the table for my wife, and I'm not unhappy doing that, because right. in the meantime I'm still pursuing the thing that.
So you're doing yeah. side jobs. You're working.
You hustle. It's a hustle, man. You gotta go out and get it.
Well, it's good that you're talking about confidence and everything, and you know you can just feel.
Tim has it. None.
No, that's a funny story. Like I had acting training, but I didn't really have audition training, which I think a lot of actors neglect. I remember, I don't know if you remember that cable vision, we go on an audition for, I think it was a commercial or a promo or something, and all the actors are nervous, and we're, you know, trying to be nice to it, and Jimmy just comes in and puts his feet on the fucking table, and whatever, yeah. And he books it because that's the character that they're like, oh, he's different, he's confident. And like with me, you know, I have studs. Like, remember what was it, White Squall? I get called in, and I'm working on the lines. But I get down, and then as soon as the casting driver is like, all right, Slate, blah blah blah, and then they go, all right, where are you from? And I go, well, I'm from New York, Long Island, but I go, no, that's the first line.
That's the first line.
He's like, yelling, what the fuck? I go, oh no, sorry, I thought I was still you, you know, and, yeah. and my confidence just went.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, getting him out of here.
But my wife took an acting class, just to see what it was like, just to see, you know, what my life was like. And she was like, and she was aggravated because everybody in the class was, they were just trying to one-up each other. When they do that, you know, in commercial. I studied with Judy King. I mean, I booked a ton of commercials in New York, but then I came here and I booked more. But then I studied with Judy King, and she really taught me the art of commercial acting. I think she's the best teacher. I don't know if you know Talent to Go. She's been over 500 nationals. She works all the time, never stops. And she's like, you know, attractive, something like that, right? And she's older, you know? And she was just explaining to me, you know, the activity. I never knew about activity.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Right? You know, play with your watch. Like, did you see Creed?
Yeah.
So look at how much he plays with his hat.
Well, it's...
He plays with his fucking hat. You're like, oh my God.
What you mean
the hat? That hat activity he does is brilliant. Yeah. That's, you know, that's...
The Law and Order.
Did you see the Creed?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's what he's doing. So he's playing, you know, a very basic is play with your watch or whatever. So I was always worried about the lines, and I had taken a class with this acting teacher, Lewis Smith, who, you know, he was the Heavenly Kid. He was all these big movies, and he's like, "Look, you can fucking act." He goes, "Stop fucking trying to act." He goes, "He got fucking pissed. He like threw something across the fucking room and almost hit me when I was on stage because he yelled at me." Because he goes, "What the fuck?" I go, "What the fuck? I'm doing the scene, you know," and I'm swearing back at him. And he goes, that's not how you would do it. That's how the fucking actor did it. You don't fucking do it. So I was doing it like Luis Guzman from He's Just Not That Into You, where she thinks he's smoking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and scene is a great little scene. So I was doing it. And he goes, you fucking think about it, and you come back next week. And I did it my way. And he goes, that, you would have fucking booked that over Luis. You know, like he tells me, I'm like, I don't know if I'm booking over Luis. but that was a thing. So, like, and then, and that was the only second time that ever happened to me. Where were we when, in New York, and it says, you know, blah, blah, blah. He gets angry, throws water. I throw the water. Fucking David Schumann, whose name real name is David Triaca. He took like a Jewish name or whatever it was when he first got in Hollywood, but he went back to his Italian name. He fucking screamed at me. You don't fucking, who gives a fuck if it says throw it? You don't do it unless you feel it. You know, all right, relax. Yeah. Like, you know, and then there was another time, this comedian, he's very well known in England, but he was from New York and he was a great comic. And what did he say? Like, go to your happy place, whatever. So he's
you got
to
do a scene, and you're gonna beginning, middle, end. I'm not gonna stop you, but be real.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and we're not gonna stop you. You stop it when you want to stop. And him and the teacher, you know, didn't get along. He's more of a comedian. He's not really an actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he just. He goes, I'm reading the paper, and he goes, time for a nap. And he just falls asleep.
He goes, snoring.
He's just sleeping. And everyone's like,
he's going, Lewis. Lewis!
Nope.
Lewis! And he screams at him. Fucking.
Well, I mean, literally, like 20 minutes. Like,
he goes, well, I went to my happy place.
That's funny.
You know, there was a school called T. Schreiber Studio, which I hated. Their claim to fame is Ed Norton. So they had, like, Ed Norton, I think, went there for maybe a year or something after he got out of Yale or Harvard. Where's he from? Or whatever it was. And they had his picture, you know, he did some theater there, you know. Like, right after he came out of Yale, that's where he went and studied. So I'm in the class, and then I had two teachers fighting over me. Betty Buckley? Is that the famous actress, Betty Buckley? One of those Broadway actors. And then this other lady who really did nothing ever, but she's like a master teacher there.
Yeah,
she's just a good teacher, and she's talk like this. She's like in her fucking late 50s. Okay, Jimmy, that's how she would talk, and you would lay it out. Did you ever go to T. Schreiber? Joe Minetti, another comedian, we hated it, right? So we're laying down, and every time you ever do the thing like you lay down and you just kind of get as relaxed as you. And laying down, and you're breathing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I would fucking, I'd fall asleep, I'd drool. And the girls like, Jimmy, I fucking hate this class. There's nothing, has nothing to do. For me, I didn't need it. Some people need that warm up, that breathing. I don't need it.
Well, see, and it's knowing your instrument, right? Like, some people do need, certain things are going to trigger different things in different people, and just being in a place where you're comfortable enough in your skin to say, nah, that's not for me. Or saying, oh, I like that part of it, so I'm going to take that, but this thing from this other class I had, I think that works well, and you put the pieces together to make the puzzle of you as an actor. Yeah. I'm glad we're talking about the business, man. I actually love talking about it, because it is, it's super complicated, but it's great.
My audience to listen to it, because it's, you know, like I said, the last three we talked a little bit, the writer director, then a comedian, and then another comedian, legendary comedian, and now you talking about the business for acting, so it's good. So there's a couple things I like to ask. First off, is there anything you want to plug?
Did an episode of You're the Worst on FXX that should be running. Running this year, actually ran the first time last year, but it should be coming back up. Monday Night Shakespeare, which we worked on together, so on YouTube. And just keep up. You can keep up with my work on my website, KelvinO'Brien.com. You know, all the social media platforms that keep it simple. It's just Kelvin O'Brien, no spaces, no apostrophe. That's Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's it.
Okay, it was O'Brien, so you're Black Irish.
Black Irish, yeah. No, but that's actually a funny story, man. Yeah, it's my uncle did this lineage. I'm from South Carolina originally. My dad's side of the family's from Charleston, and so basically, what it was, like the people that enslaved my ancestors were Irish, and that's how we got this name.
Aldi O'Brien. Okay, cool. Yeah. So is there who was your man crush? And you know, I would think you would enjoy Denzel.
As far as an actor or just in general?
In his big black dick. Yeah.
King Kong has nothing on it.
Yeah, really. King Kong. But no, acting-wise, I do like Denzel's work a lot. I like Johnny Depp's fearlessness as an artist. Sure. Yeah, he's, you know, Kevin, I like actors who aren't afraid to bring themselves to different roles and take chances. But if I had to pick Michael Jordan, I love the dude.
Sure.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan is good. It's rare that we get actors that want a basketball player.
Yeah.
I like him for his gambling skills.
I like his baseball.
That's the horrible joke I'll tell you off air. All right. So if you were in the mob, what would your mob name be?
It's tough. Put me on the spot. I don't know. That's tough. Something with Luciano.
Luciano.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody wants to be Italian. Luciano. Freaking, what's his name? What was our boy?
Marco Luciano.
Rudy Rush. Rudy Rush used to do it. Comedian. Remember Rudy Rush from Nepal? He used to be our boy. I mean, I haven't seen him so long. Hit me up on Facebook.
Billy Blanco
from the Bronx.
From the Bronx. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what did he used to say? He goes, Italians are racist. He goes, they don't mean to be racist, but they'll be, if you're black, they'll be racist right to your face. He goes, they get in a car accident. He's like, oh, are you kidding me? He goes up to the cop, are you freaking Puff Daddy over here?
Yeah.
And then she's like, do not come, bitch. Queen Latifah has an attitude. Just So yeah, he's an Italian. So anyways, what would your porn name be?
Long Dong.
Long Dong Luciano.
That's your mom's name.
That is it.
That's great. Done. Long Dong Luciano.
Oh no, not Long Dong.
So I haven't really. You seem like a gentleman and a scholar. You seem like you're not. You're very educated. You don't. Not that I don't know. I don't know if you swore at all. But do you have a favorite swear word?
Fuck.
Fuck.
Nice.
Like fuck.
It's crisp and classic.
It's keep it
like
simple.
A BLT.
And it could do. You could be used in so many different scenarios, right?
Right.
Yeah. It's a verb. Be a noun. Yeah. It's great.
Fuck lettuce and tomato.
Fuck lettuce and tomato. Good. And how did you feel about when people say the N-word?
Ah, man, that's new. I mean, that's crazy. That's funny. Honestly,
my last guest said it. You were a little upset. I could feel it.
No, I wasn't upset at all because I was.
I was awkward.
It was. I grew up in the South, right? So I've heard it. I've been called it. The word to me only has as much power as you give it, right? Mm-hmm. So if somebody were to come up to me and call me that to my face, I honestly wouldn't get. I wouldn't feel anger towards that person. I'd be shocked. Don't get me wrong,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't elicit that feeling in me. I was gonna say, and I was also one of those people that if we listened to a song, and you know I was with one of my white friends, and you know the word would come up, and they happened to say like that never really bothered me. It's always intent, right? So if you're saying it to try to hurt me. I guess I would feel some way about it, but then at the same time, it's like you're just come on.
It's like,
we're still doing this. Like, come on, man.
Let's quote Dave Chappelle to end the show. Brooklyn Buddha Podcast. Tim, say goodbye.
Goodbye,
Woody.
Goodbye.
Dave Chappelle says he goes. I remember I was hanging out with my white friend and the DJ, and he said the N word. He was like, hey, what's going on? He's all my black friends away. He's like, what's up, N words, right?
Yeah,
and. He goes, the record stopped. He got the shit kicked out of him. He goes, I hated to do it. But he was fucking with my people. Brooklyn Buddha Podcast, we're out. Calvin O'Brien, thank you so much,
brother. Appreciate it, bro.
Thank you. Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.